On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Western families are choosing to have smaller families, and there is concern that it could impact the West's standing on the world stage, especially their economies. Fewer children mean fewer workers, fewer innovators, and fewer consumers. Our guest this hour warns, beware. This hour On Point, the population problem. How big is it really? Joining me now from Las Vegas, Nevada, is Herbert Meyer. He served as vice chairman of the CIA's National Intelligence Council during the Reagan administration and was the first senior U.S. official to predict the Soviet Union's collapse. He is currently on the lecture circuit warning CEOs and others that the declining birth rate in the United States has dire consequences. Herb Meyer, nice to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
What is the headline from your research as it relates to the shifting demographics of the Western civilization?
We're in the middle of a population implosion that no one saw coming and whose consequences will be enormous. May I give you the numbers?
Please.
If you want to keep a steady population in a country, the birth rate has to be 2.1 births per woman. You need the two births just to replace the mother and the father. And then you need 0.1. Some children don't grow up and have their own children. So 2.1 is the key number. That keeps the population steady. Today in Western Europe, the birth rate's an average 1.5. That's 30% below replacement. And what that means in real numbers is that 30 years from now, there will be between 70 and 80 million fewer Europeans alive than are alive today. That's the biggest, fastest population drop in the history of the world, bigger than the population drop that happened at the end of the Roman Empire and bigger than the population drop that happened when the plague hit Europe in the 13th and 14th centuries.
So what's at the heart of this in a postmodern era? What's going on? Why are birth rates so low?
It's a combination of reasons. There's no statistical or scientific answer. It's kind of, you know, you look and feel your way toward the right explanation for it. In part, as women move into the workforce, they delay marriage, get married later. Obviously, you have fewer children. As you lead an affluent middle-class lifestyle, that tends to be more compatible with smaller families. It's hard to take 9 kids to Disney World kind of a thing. But the key reason seems to be a loss of faith. When people lose their faith, if you think you're just a collection of molecules held together by the force of gravity, a lot of the traditional values go by the boards, and having kids is one of them. By the way, so is marriage. In Europe today, only 1 out of 7 couples gets married. That's quite a change. There's another reason as well that's very important. If you look at what they're teaching in our schools, here in the United States, in Japan, in Europe as well, what they're teaching is that the worst thing that ever happened to planet Earth is humanity. We pollute, we use up resources. Well, if you teach that to children for 15 years, they grow up and they think that bringing a baby into the world is committing a hostile act against the planet. And so they don't do it.
You talk about numbers in Western Europe, Mr. Meyer. What about in the United States? What's the birth replacement rate here?
The birth rate in the U.S. has now dropped to 2. So for the first time, we're below the replacement level. Not as bad as the Europeans or the Japanese, whose birth rate's about 1.3, but we're going in the same direction.
And our picture is different because why?
We're a more religious country.
And also because of our immigrant population to some extent?
No, the Europeans are bringing in immigrants as well. You know, there's a human operating system. You need people to make the system work. And if you don't produce them yourself, you import them. The Europeans import Muslims. We import Hispanics. When you look at the birth rate ethnically in the U.S., the Anglo birth rate is 1.8. The Hispanic birth rate's 2.75. That's why we have a 2 birth rate. Last year in the United States, 23% of all births in this country were to women who themselves had not been born in the U.S. That hasn't happened since my grandmother was having kids in New York's Lower East Side a century ago.
And our aging population, the baby boomers now starting to retire, they'll certainly shift the numbers and our burdens as well.
Well, that's the problem. What happens when your birth rate drops below that 2.1 replacement level is that your whole population is getting older. For example, in Japan, which has a 1.3 birth rate, by 2020, one out of every five Japanese citizens will be over the age of 70. Now, how you run a modern industrial society with one out of five people over the age of 70, nobody has the slightest idea. It's never been done. We're going in the same direction. There's something that economists call the elderly dependency ratio. It simply means that when you drop below that replacement level, the percentage of your population that's older increases. As the baby boomers enter their 60s and start to retire, our elderly dependency ratio about doubles from 19% to 38%. So the population is getting older, and that means you need younger people to support the older people, not just to provide the physical support, but the economic support. In other words, to generate the wealth for the tax revenue to pay everybody Social Security and Medicare. And if you haven't got young people, you're in trouble.
So this is all Western civilization. On the contrary, you write, population rates in the Muslim world are increasing.
Yes, they're very high. They go from 3 up to 5 and 6. When you look around the world, the only countries whose birth rates are consistently above the replacement level are, in fact, the Muslim countries. And there's an expression in the Muslim world, you can beat us on the battlefield, but we beat you in the bedroom. And what they mean in the long run, demographics wins.
So how do you put these two pieces together then, as far as economics? There's so many different components to this puzzle.
Well, first you have an economic problem. What you're doing in the Western world is you're putting an increasing tax burden on a smaller percentage of younger people. And when you put a crushing tax burden on younger people, life's hard. They can't afford to get married. They can't afford to buy houses. There aren't enough of them to generate the tax revenue that the older people need, again, for things like Social Security, Medicare, and so forth. And by the way, when you put a crushing tax burden on younger people, you spiral it down even more because they delay marriage, have fewer children, and so forth. So you're in a real economic jam just on that.
What about security issues?
Well, you get that, too, if you don't have enough younger people. You know, as we get older, we become risk adverse. That's just what happens when we get older. And when you get older, you really don't want to fight. And if you're not willing to fight to protect your civilization, you could lose it.
You talk about Muslim populations. What's going on in China and India?
That's interesting. China, as you know, has that one child per family policy. The birth rate in China is 1.1. China is now the most rapidly aging country in the world. Japan had the very good sense to get rich before it grew old. China's growing old before it gets rich. And boy, is that going to be a problem for them. That's going to be an economic hammer blow. In India, the birth rate's about 2.8. That's fairly high. Now, there's an odd thing happening in India and China that doesn't get talked about very much, and that's the gender imbalance. Here's what's happening. When we have babies, you get 103 boys for every 100 girls. That's the human ratio. It's not Republican versus Democrat or American versus Asian. Today, we have the technology to know which is which. Most expectant parents know the sex of their unborn child. Well, in China and India, there's a cultural preference for boys. So they're aborting the girls. So many that in India and China, instead of having the normal human ratio of 103 boys for every 100 girls, the ratio is 118 boys for every 100 girls. And in some provinces of India and China, it's now reached 130 boys for every 100 girls. And what that means in real numbers is that today in India and China, there are more than 130 million boys growing up who cannot find wives. And that's a catastrophe. Let me tell you something. The single most destabilizing force in the world is a bunch of unmarried men on Saturday night.
You know, you mentioned this in your writings as far as how is that relates and affects Russia.
Yeah, Russia has a very low birth rate. So low, in fact. By the way, the average lifespan of a man in Russia is now under 58 years of age. By 2050, the population of Russia will be smaller than the population of Yemen, which has one of the world's higher birth rates. Now, Russia is very big. It covers one-sixth of the Earth's land surface. It is simply not possible to defend one-sixth of the Earth's land surface with a population that small.
And much of its oil.
Much of it's oil and gas. That's right. And who needs the energy?
Mm-hmm.
China and India. So what people are thinking now is, you know, the only way to control 130 million, 200 million unmarriageable men. By the way, the Chinese government says the gender gap will be over 200 million by 2050. The only way to control this is you put them in an army. And then the question is, okay, what do you do with an army that big? And then you have this interesting problem of Russia's got the energy but cannot defend it. China and India have the armies. That gets very interesting very fast.
Are we starting to see the economic shifts already, or how long will it take before we do?
You are beginning to see them. Look at the trouble that Europe is in. I know Europe is kind of in a death spiral. In Germany, for example, the number of deaths now exceeds the number of births. That means you have empty buildings, empty apartments, empty condos, empty houses. So you run into real trouble very, very quickly. All through the Western world, we're bringing in immigrants. Now, there's nothing wrong with immigrants. I happen to like immigrants. That's how my family got here. But you have to do that in massive numbers. So, yes, you run into trouble. China's going to run into trouble. If you just do the math, you can see how quickly their population's going to drop.
We are talking about declining birth rates in the Western world and whether we should be alarmed. With us today is Herb Meyer. He served as vice chairman of the CIA's National Intelligence Council in the Reagan administration. He's now sounding the alarm over the declining birth rates throughout the West. We're joined now from San Diego, California, by David Kelly, managing director and senior economic advisor at Putnam Investments. Nice to have you with us, David.
Glad to be here.
So what's your response to what Herb Meyer is saying? Are the numbers of population decline as devastating as he suggests?
No, not at all. I think that's a much too pessimistic view of the world, at least from an economic perspective. And I, you know, that's what I specialize in. Economic growth is about productivity. It's not about population. Pouring more people at a problem is the crudest way of trying to grow an economy. The best way to grow an economy is through productivity. And let me give you one example. Herb was talking a little bit about China. Well, over the last 30 years, China's seen about 1% population growth per year. But over that same period of time, they've seen 9.5% GDP growth. So what they're doing, you know, they're getting 1% more population, they're getting almost 10% more output. It's 90% productivity growth, 1% population growth. And particularly when we see in the world economy in general, we see an acceleration in economic growth. We see a lot of information technology. I think there's tremendous room for productivity improvement to make up for any problem that we have in demographics.
And technology, you say, as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's in economics, the key thing is not how many people you have working. It's how well they work. For example, in the United States, manufacturing workers in the United States earn about $27 an hour, including benefits. In China, they earn about $1 an hour. And in rough terms, that is a measure of their productivity. And the reason for that is because American workers are armed, or at least have been armed, with much better technology than their foreign counterparts. Now, that's changing a little bit, obviously, in manufacturing. But in general, if you give a few workers great technology, they can do great things. You don't need lots of people.
Herb Meyer, what's your response to what David Kelly is saying, that this is much too pessimistic? This is about productivity, not population size.
Well, first of all, I was giving statistics, not making an argument. But second, while productivity is indeed important, David's right about that, you need customers. If there's no one to buy what you're producing, you can't be productive. Let me give you an example. As I said, in countries like Germany, the number of deaths exceeds the number of births. Now, you're not going to put up a new housing development if there are already empty buildings. So that's not very good for a very productive construction company.
You both...
Yeah, you need customers. I mean, you need kids.
David, your response?
Yeah, no, I agree with that to some extent. It is a little easier to grow an economy when you've got a growing number of consumers. But also think about the change in the way that we consume. Right now in contemporary America, there is people were worried that with the slowdown in home sales in the last year or two, we would see a slowdown in consumer spending in lots of areas. But what we see is people are, they just change the types of products they buy. So they upgrade their refrigerator or get a flat screen TV or buy cell phones. It's not really that we have more consumer units out there that's pushing up consumer spending. It's that there is an increasing variety of things that we are convinced that we need to own. And that's really what's pushing up consumer spending over the years.
Gentlemen, hold the line just a moment. Let's go to some callers who are waiting to join our conversation. Jessica, first off, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Jessica, hello to you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk about the cost of education and how that can affect population in the West. In the case of me and my husband, we have one child, and we always planned on having a very large family. But it's taken us so long to complete our education, and we're so saddled with student loan debts that we really are going to have probably half the size of family or less than we had originally planned.
David, cost of education, a big issue.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, on the other hand, there's a huge benefit to education, too. Again, I agree that that does limit the growth in population. But if you look at recent statistics, if you get an advanced degree, you'll earn four times as much in America as somebody who didn't complete high school. So it is true that I agree that people having a longer educational experience does tend to diminish population growth. But, you know, if those people tend to, you know, if you'd quit high school, say, and then you go into the workforce, you earn, say, $20,000 today. If you go on and get an advanced degree, you earn $80,000 today. So even, you know, in purely economic terms, it may be better for people to get all the education they're capable of, fulfill their full abilities in the workforce, rather than have one or two more children. I mean, for a more balanced society, we want to have lots of children, obviously. But from a purely cold economic perspective, it may be that even though you're faced with that choice, the economy may be better off because of it.
Herb Meyer, you mentioned this a little earlier, but when you don't have the young workers to replace the older workers, you have to import them. And so this is happening in Europe, all over Europe, and yet we hear so much about the difficulty of integrating these populations into their host countries, which politically, I guess, can be very dangerous, if not catastrophic, no?
Yes, you're right. The Europeans believe very deeply in multiculturalism. Now, there's a word you hear a lot. Have you noticed that everybody uses the word multiculturalism, but nobody bothers to define it? The technical definition of multiculturalism is people of different faiths and cultures are permitted to settle without being required to integrate. That's what's been happening in Europe. They're bringing in Muslims, but they're not requiring them to integrate. And that's why you're seeing so many of the political and social problems in Europe that we're seeing today. Here in the United States, we've always been a melting pot. Bring your food, bring your music, leave everything else in the old country, become an American. Increasingly, we're going down the multicultural road, meaning people can come here and settle without being required to integrate. Over the next 25 years, we're going to bring between 60 and 70 million immigrants into the United States. They'll be mostly but not entirely Hispanic. The political issue will be multiculturalism. Do we wish to make them become Americans the way our grandparents and parents did, or will we permit them to settle here but remain in their, you know, original cultures, whether it's Hispanic or something else? We can look at Europe and see what they've done and decide whether that's right for us. So you're going to have an enormous political battle over how we bring in the immigrants we must bring in to keep the machine going.
But what about, Herb, if the immigrant population is lower skilled, generally less educated than—
Well, by definition, it will be. I mean, that's the nature of it. And nothing wrong with that. That's how everybody's grandparents, great-parents, grandparents got here. But when my grandparents got here, they didn't expect to, you know, press two for Polish. They understood that they and their kids would operate in English and in the American society. They wanted to integrate just as fast as they could. And by the way, many of the Hispanics are doing exactly the same thing, and that's wonderful. But you get a percentage that wish to remain in their old culture. You know, what's a guest worker? It's not an American, is it? So that's going to be the political issue. Of course you bring them in at the bottom and then they move up. That's the way we've always done it. But we've done it by integrating them. And the question is whether we will continue to do that or not. That's the political issue that comes out from this.
Another call from Ginger in Holliston, Massachusetts. Ginger, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have never given this a consideration. I think it's absolutely fascinating what Herb is talking about. And, you know, I always thought that reducing the population was helping to feed more people. But in the long run, it seems like, from what he's saying, it could be devastating. And I also thought it was very interesting about what he brought up about the male-female population in China and India and putting more men being in the military. It's almost this may be a reach, but we're going to war. Every time you go to war, it's for some particular type of interest. Currently, it's oil. Perhaps later on, it will be to just eliminate lives.
Ginger, thank you for your thoughts. Sarah is calling from Connecticut. Sarah, you're on the line.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. I think the biggest thing that's changing population are people's attitudes, even among OBGYNs, because I have four children, and I practice, you know, natural family planning, so I am open to having maybe one or two more. And every time you have a baby and you go for your 6 week and you talk to one of the OBGYNs, they really disapprove of natural family planning methods. They really do want to push birth control, and also not just OBGYNs, but peers. When I talk to peers or relatives about, you know, possibly I would like five or six children and not four, they really think that it's rather selfish of me, and they're very hostile towards my wanting, you know, possibly a larger family. And, you know, I think this attitude is pervasive among, you know, middle-class America.
Sarah, thanks for your call. David Kelly, if not by population growth, how should the West and other Western nations, how should the U.S. and other Western nations improve their economic positions? How could they do so?
Well, I think what we need to be is as flexible and as free as we can be. For example, on the issue of the aging population, you know, we are all getting older, but we can also all work longer. And, you know, Herb was talking about how you need people for a modern industrial society. But you know what? It isn't really a modern industrial society. It's a modern services society. Only 10% of Americans actually work in manufacturing. Most of the jobs out there are services jobs, and they can be done by many people who are in their 60s, maybe even going into their 70s. We're already seeing this go on. I mean, this is a demographic change that's unfolding in front of our eyes. Just 10 years ago, about 17% of the people aged 65 to 74 were working in the United States. This year, it's about 23%, and it's going up. So I think so long as we're flexible here, if we're all going to live longer, we should all work longer. That deals with some of the problem of, you know, which is a genuine problem, which Herb was talking about, of having too few workers for the number of retirees.
Herb, what about that service sector point that David's making?
Well, when the show's over, maybe David could walk outside the studio and suggest that we raise the retirement age to 80 and see if he gets a standing ovation from the crowd. Americans don't want to retire later. In fact, they want to retire earlier. And this generation of baby boomers in particular values its free time very, very highly. We used to have 16 workers for everybody on Social Security. Now we have three. We're heading very swiftly for a time when we'll only have two. That's when it goes bankrupt. If you don't have those workers generating the tax revenue for Social Security, Medicare, and so forth, everybody has to keep working to 70, 75, 80. I don't think that's going to be politically popular.
Devin is on the line now from Worcester, Massachusetts. Devin, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually wondering if, because I know that the population rate actually outpaces the Western world and the Third World, what is, in that context, what is the overall population rate of the human race? Are we growing? I'm pretty sure we are. And it seems like the real question isn't whether or not we should be having more children in individual families in the West. It seems like how we're going to deal with immigration. Which was brought up earlier, that really seems to be the real issue here. And population, I'm pretty sure, is still growing. So I don't really see that as a big issue.
Devin, thanks for your call. Herb Meyer, will you take the answer to that question?
Yeah, he's right. The world population is still growing. It's shifting around, though. while it's growing in total, and that's absolutely correct, it's imploding in places like China, Japan, Europe, and slowing down in the United States, and growing more rapidly, in, as we said before, in the Muslim parts of the world. So the world population is growing, but it's growing very unevenly. Mm. And that's something that each society and country has to look at and say, where do we wish to be in all this?
And what will happen in the United States, Herb, as the number of Chinese laborers declines?
China's plans to become a world economic and political power will be slowed down. Remember, with a 1.1 birth rate, their population is dropping very, very fast. And because it's aging, even at the Chinese economic level, that's an economic hammer blow to have to take care of that many elderly people. And remember, they only have one child, and the child's a son. Hmm. And, you know, in most families, the caregivers are the daughters and the daughters-in-law, not the sons and the sons-in-law. So Chinese older people are suddenly waking up, realizing they only had one kid. It's a boy, and there's no daughter or daughter-in-law to take care of them. Mm. So that's going to be a very serious problem for China. In fact, there's a new business in China of flying Chinese bachelors to Vietnam, where arrangements are made for them to meet young Vietnamese women and bring them home as their brides. And as you can imagine, that isn't sitting very well with the Vietnamese men.
Another question from a caller. Anthony is in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Anthony. You're on the line.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine. Thank you.
Good. I'd like to perhaps challenge and complicate a little bit Mr. Meyer's depiction of immigration to the United States today versus immigration 100 years ago when his grandparents and my grandparents, for that matter, showed up here. When our collective grandparents came here, the door was pretty much open. There was very little illegal immigration into the United States. So if you want assimilation to happen in the ways that he describes happening 100 years ago, and I also have to say that his take on this kind of, you know, hunky-dory assimilation process that happened 100 years ago is incredibly simplistic, let's put it that way. But I mean, the major point here, I think, is that when you've closed the door, essentially, but you still have people coming in illegally, expecting them to assimilate, to learn the language, to do all of the things that he describes, when they're not here in a way that where they can be open members of society, is completely unrealistic.
I'll let Meyer answer your question, Anthony. Thank you for your call.
I agree with Anthony. There is a very serious glitch here, and he's absolutely right. We are bringing in a lot of illegal immigrants, but then we want them to jump in the way our legal grandparents and great-grandparents did. And he's right. That's a serious problem. And it gets to the issue of, you know, the whole question of immigration and how should we handle it. That's almost another subject. But he's absolutely right about that.
David, I wanted to give you a chance to respond and hear your take on the immigration piece of the population increase. I know you don't necessarily agree with Herb Meyer on that.
Well, you know, actually, that's one of the few areas that I think I do agree with Herb on this subject. I think we have a huge problem in this country with hypocrisy, basically, when it comes to immigration. I don't agree that we should force people to assimilate, but I absolutely agree with Anthony's point, the call from Tampa, that by forcing so many people who want to immigrate to this country to immigrate illegally into this country, we really make it very difficult for them to assimilate. I believe we absolutely need to have documentation for every person living in the United States, make it possible for people to work legally in this country, and that will help them assimilate. But it also gives us more control over the process, because what's happening is we're actually restricting the number of very well-educated immigrants that we're bringing in from various places while not really protecting our borders. And that's actually changing the immigration mix in a way that perhaps is not in the best interest of the United States. It makes sense for us to, you know, people want to come to the United States, but a lot of educated people who've got degrees from foreign universities want to come to the United States and work here. They are a tremendous benefit to our society, and we should have a very open approach towards encouraging immigration of people who have grown up and been educated abroad.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now at this point. Joining us from Oxford, England is John Gilbo. He's co-chair of the Optimum Population Trust, a think tank that analyzes the impact of population growth on the environment. John, nice to have you with us.
Nice to be with you too, Jane. Hello.
Hello. You come at this from a totally different perspective, an environmental perspective. What's your take on increasing Western population for the health of the world economy? What are the implications of that from your perspective?
Well, yes, my perspective is definitely global, and I do feel, with respect, that the discussion so far has been far too Western-orientated, and in particular US-orientated. We all live on one global island now, and you must realize what's going on. Just consider the facts. Fact one, 6.7 billion people in the world at time present, according to the Population Reference Bureau of US. Every year, 137 million births. Every year, 56 million deaths. Every year, the world increases by 80 million extra people per year, which is the population of Germany per year. Now, Herb is worried about the 70 countries where we've reached replacement fertility or less. But there are 180 countries in the world, and those other 110 are the engines of population growth. And what happens is that every week a city of 1.5 million people has to be built somewhere in the world. Just think of the environmental impact of that city since last Wednesday. And by next Wednesday, all the time, 1.5 million extra people, they need land. They destroy habitats. They use energy. They create carbon dioxide. All that is happening, and the engine of a lot of the environmental problems is just the number of people doing it. It isn't just per-person consumption. It isn't just that we need better technology per person. It's the number of persons.
Herb Meyer, what's your response to the environmental piece of this and to what John just said?
There is a serious issue. Look, you have to be careful not to trash the planet. If we all choke to death, it doesn't matter how many of us are here, we're going to die.
Perfect.
So John's right about that. Now, my approach is let's use our ingenuity to figure out how to do this, how to make it possible for people to live in a clean environment. And that's where David's point about technology and productivity comes in. John's attitude is you look at a baby and you calculate how much that kid will pollute over the course of his lifetime. You can also look at a baby. Wait, you can also look at a baby and say, wait a minute, that kid could grow up and find the cure for cancer or write a great novel.
Yeah,
we can figure this out. It's not beyond human ingenuity to figure out how to do this and protect the environment. John's right. We need to do it.
John, go ahead and respond.
I have to say this. I'm not saying either or I'm saying both and, Herbert. Babies are lovely. I'm just a new granddad for the first time in the last month.
That's a new polluter.
It is possible to have too much of a good thing, and the world is having too much of a good thing in terms of babies. Every extra baby in a developed country like UK, we've calculated, is equivalent to 620 return flights to New York, in terms of carbon dioxide production in that person's lifetime. 3 million miles of driving in a Toyota Prius. That's what you don't have if you have an absent person in Britain. So that these things go together. It's not either or. We need to stabilize human numbers at the same time as reducing per-person consumption and definitely hoping that some of the babies that are coming along will be fantastic scientists and will show us how to use better, greener technology. What I'm saying basically is this. Family planning is crucial. I've been a specialist in family planning for 40 years, and I believe that the pill, the injection, the implant are as much environmental icons as is my bicycle. I do not have a car. I go everywhere by bicycle. I totally believe in every aspect, or by public transport. I totally believe in everything that goes with the environment. But I think the neglected item, the thing that seems to be strangely and very sadly taboo, is the number of people doing it.
I'm going to go to the phones now because we have a lot of callers wanting to jump in here. Paul from Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Paul, you're on the line. Hello.
Hello, Jane. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
And I want to follow up a little bit on the environmental. I'd like to ask a question to both guests. Where do they see the limiting factor on the ability of population to increase, in particular in the Middle East or the Muslim countries? I see water as a critical issue that technology isn't going to necessarily solve the problem. And on the CIA authority, There have been reports that the CIA has looked at population in terms of world conflicts. I'll take my answer off the line.
Thanks, Paul, for your call. Herb Meyer?
I'm not sure what the CIA is up to these days. I'm not there anymore. There are kind of two separate issues. Increasing population does not automatically lead to war. It does lead, as John said, to more use of the Earth's resources. So we have to sort that out. He's right about that. My argument is we can do it, and that people are part of the solution, not necessarily the problem, and we have to look at it from both sides.
John Gilbo, your response?
Yes. I would always say that most wars are caused by land hunger, land shortage, and water shortage, and this kind of thing. They're caused by shortages.
You couldn't possibly argue that the current war is caused by a land shortage.
Go ahead and finish, John, please.
My point was, they're caused by shortages, but the shortages, which people forget, are caused by people longages. Can I say that again? People longages cause resource shortages. You don't get shortages of water if you think of the Nile with its eight countries depending on that little river. You don't get them just because, the Nile's the same, but you get too many people wanting the water. And we're soon going to indeed be having wars about water in North Africa and in the Middle East, definitely.
And the
people pressure is one of the biggest factors causing it. I was born in Rwanda, Urundi, brought up there. Some of my friends were killed in the Rwandan genocide. And I spoke Kinyarwanda before I spoke English. And I'm sure that that dreadful genocide was in part caused by the population pressure on the land.
Another call and another question from Lauren, who's in Worcester, Massachusetts. Lauren, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I really feel very upset by what Mr. Meyer is saying. I think that whether he means to or not, he's putting a message across that sounds very much like, you know, is he trying to say, okay, Americans and Europeans, you all need to try to have as many babies as possible now because the Muslims are going to, you know, take over the world? I think it sounds it sounds a little racist, and I think that it's very counterproductive, and it totally ignores the fact that we have global warming here that we're dealing with, and that we're trying as a society, or I feel as a society, that we need to be trying to change our behavior and change the paradigm. We need to, you know, like the old model of sort of having as many people as possible in your country is making you strong, and also like consuming as much as possible. And
we get your message, Lauren. Thank you. Let me turn to Herb Meyer. This woman, Lauren, says you sound anti-immigration, you sound anti-Muslim, racist even. Your response?
No, I think she's misunderstood. I haven't suggested anything even remotely like we should have more babies to raise soldiers to fight Muslims. What I'm simply pointing out is that our societies in the West are aging rapidly. We don't have enough young people to take care of the older people, both physically take care of them and economically take care of them by generating the tax revenue for the Social Security programs and so forth. So I'm making an economic argument, not a military one.
Can I come in on that one?
Yes, please, John.
Because we keep hearing this thing said over here as well, that we need more young people to improve the dependency ratio, the potential support ratio that it's technically called. But in fact, if you think about it very straightforwardly, if you have lots more young people, because there are an awful lot of old people, you've got to remember that in 70 years' time, all those young people become even more old people. And then you'll have to have even more young people. It's been calculated that if you're trying to do that in Europe, this is Professor David Coleman from Oxford, to preserve a dependency ratio of the European Union at around 4 as it is now, the population would need to rise to about 2,500 million in this century, becoming the same size as India and China together. That's not feasible, and it's environmental catastrophe. How do you answer that?
I'd like to agree with John on that. I think the You know, what it sounds like we're talking about here is a population arms race. And Herb is proposing that what we should do in the West is build up our numbers of population so that we can counterbalance the growth of population in other parts of the world. And frankly, you did mention the Muslim world. I think disarmament might be a much better answer here. I mean, the real problem is it is not very healthy for a society for poor countries to have very large families. I come from Ireland, which in its history had its greatest national disaster because the fertility rate was too high in the 19th century. So I think a population disarmament might be much more to the point. Do what we can to try and prevent ridiculous population growth in some of the emerging world, and that's much healthier for the planet. And ultimately, our economic problems can be solved through the evolution and the dynamism of the economy and productivity anyway.
May I jump in on that?
I'll let Herb Meyer respond. Herb?
It is amazing to me how people hear what they want to hear rather than what was said. I haven't proposed a population arms race. Not at all. I'm simply pointing out that in the Western world, we're in the middle of a population implosion that nobody saw coming, and it creates problems, and we need to deal with it. That's all.
What are some countries doing, Herb, to try to get people to populate in Western Europe specifically?
Some countries like France are increasing the tax benefits they give. For example, in France, if you have two children and are willing to have a third, there's a fairly hefty tax exemption. We've increased ours. It used to be, I think, $600 a year. Now it's about $1,200 a year. So countries are doing things like that. So far, there's not much indicator of success. In Russia, they tried something extraordinary. Last September, the governor of the province of Ulyanovsk issued an order. All workers are to be given the afternoon off. And the second half of the order, I'm quoting, is they are to go home and create a patriot for Russia. Only in Russia would they order something like this. Our information on the experiment's incomplete. We do know that everybody obeyed the first half of the order and took the day off. We don't know what they did. So countries are trying different things.
Last call of the hour from Liz in Long Lake, New York. Liz, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Jane. How are you? And thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so glad that finally the environmental issue was addressed. I was born to somebody who, in the 1950s, waited 4 years to have her first child. You know, was criticized for that. Then she waited 4 years to have her second child, all in the process of making sure that we were educated in college and she could pay for it. So family planning was something that just made so much sense to me, and I think thinking globally is extremely, extremely important, as this is a very small planet now. We're so connected, and I was concerned. I've heard now that he's not talking about a population arms race, but my other concern is this sort of attitude, whether or not it will sort of spike, you know, the Christian right and feeling legitimate about, you know, preventing birth control.
Liz, thank you for your call.
Can I make one quick comment?
Yes, please. John Gilbo.
One of the things that's often said is if you've got a quantitative concern about human numbers, you must be for coercion. And I think it must be said, while I still got the floor, that I and our organization are not in the least bit for coercion. We're for education, and we're for pushing at the open door of need, because many surveys have shown that the people of the developing world want family planning far more than used to be thought. And 80 million unplanned pregnancies occur a year, which means that if you help people not to have them, you're not coercing them. They're not having babies they didn't want in the first place.
Herb Meyer, I'm going to give you the floor for the last 30 seconds of our hour here. Thoughts based on our conversation this hour?
Well, the whole point of that lecture I do on what in the world is going on is to stimulate precisely the kind of conversation we've been having among the three of us and among your callers. By the way, all the numbers I gave you are official numbers. So they're real numbers. What we need to decide as a society, as Western civilization, is what do we wish to do? And if we've gotten the conversation going, that's a good thing.
Herb Meyer, joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada. We appreciate your thoughts today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
John Gilbo is in Oxford, England. John, we appreciate your time as well. Thank you.
Thank you, too, Jane.
And David Kelly in San Diego, California. David, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.